Welcome to the Centrum for Tantra podcast. My name is Kim Bruggeman, and during this episode, in English, you can listen to mantra master and musician Russell Paul, as well as our senior trainer Remmelt van Kleef. Together they teach the Yoga of Sound retreat, wherein mantra and puja play an important role. Please enjoy their conversation on these powerful ancient practices. Russell and Remmelt, so nice to see you both. Russell, you are all the way in the United States. How are you?
Good. Very good. Never a dull moment here in this country, as you know.
And how is it for you to come to the Netherlands again?
I cannot tell you how... I don't have words for it because, you know, we built this momentum since your 25th anniversary with Center for Tantra. And there was this incredible energy year after year, and then COVID came. And COVID was like a big hole for all of us, I think. So everybody. But I do think that it also helped many of us, myself included, find ways to heal. And so I'm really, really looking forward.
Well, it's so nice to see you, Russell, and thank you so much for joining us. Also here is Remmelt. Remmelt, how are you doing?
Well, never a dull moment here in Holland, especially not in my office. So I'm really busy and also excited about, yeah, part of the busyness is in fact a quite late decision we took that Russell could come this year and will come this year. But it adds a lot of preparations, of course, and adds to the pressure on the agendas and things like that. But I'm also very excited. I'm very excited. And right now in the moment, I feel quite shy. When Russell said, I don't have words for this, I thought, well, that might be repeated during the podcast many, many times due to the subject. And I'm a little anxious that I won't find the words, especially not in English, to express the depth of the subject we will try to approach in this podcast. Even in Dutch, I think it's already difficult, but then in a foreign language, I hope God will help me.
Remmelt, I was wondering, how is it for you that Russell will come to the Netherlands again?
So, of course, I've been thinking a lot about what we have been doing over the years. I think it's hard to express for me to say how much I appreciated the things we've done till now and how much I appreciate our friendship and the endeavors we took and the risks we took and how brave you were to come to Holland. And well, maybe the friendship is the most dear to me, but also besides that, your teachings and your knowledge, they have indescribable value to me, especially where they have opened such a different realm and field of experience in the mantras and the pujas, other than the things we had been working with in Tantra, within our center, till the moment you came. What I really appreciate and deeply value is that we continue to meet and to travel using the mantras and the pujas to reconnect on a mysteriously deep level of the soul and the connection that comes from that. Between you and me, but also between you and all the other people who are joining when you're here.
Well, thank you very much, Remold. Would you like to respond, Russell?
Yes. So when you ask the question, how do I feel about returning, let's say, to Holland? It's also a very, very complex question for me. And the reason is because when we got to meet Remold and Carla in India, somehow already it felt like some very deep, very mysterious bond. We cannot explain this. We cannot explain, you know, sometimes we meet people or we get to know people, and there's a difference because we always are meeting people. And when Remold was talking about the connection, because it's really about a very deep connection, and this is very hard to explain. One way I have thought about it, and I have thought about it a lot, and I think about it a lot, is that it's like suddenly finding somebody on this planet who comes from the same very far off region in the universe. It's a very far off, it's very far out, to use a classic hippie expression, far out, you know, so far, so far out. We cannot describe where this place is, how far it is, where we have come from, but we have a connection to that place. And it's like finding somebody who can share the space and then have a language. And there's music, of course. This is how we came together, because of the music and the chanting. But then we discovered something else. We also discovered that when we do things together, something very magical happens. Also because both Remold and Carla, you know, they have something very special too, very extraordinary teachers. But then we start to do these things, these very mysterious things that we cannot explain, but that somehow we share these magical sounds that we call mantras, and these things that we call puja. But these are only words. We cannot really explain mantra. We cannot explain puja. It's not so easy to use words. All we can say is there is some very deep realities behind these things. And with Remold and Carla and myself, we feel drawn into this mysterious experience when we get together, and then we start to do certain things together, these mantras, these pujas. We start to practice together, simply being together, practicing together. And I have learned so much, especially witnessing how Remold and Carla process people's experience, how they process people's resistance, how they process people who are triggered with their traumatic experience from the past. Because in a group, it's always possible, you know, we can be very safe, but something will, especially when we start to do strong things, is possible. But they're so expert at this. Very good, very good. So very good. So very adept. And so this has been a tremendous learning for me, where I have felt very supported, but also drawn into their experience, which is non-dualism. Non-dualism. And I come from a tradition, this Sri Vidya tradition, that is, you know, in many ways, it is dualistic. It is dualistic. And I understand how hard that can be for some people, not everybody, for some people. Some people, it's hard, especially in Holland, you know, coming out of this, I guess, Lutheran or whatever denomination, right? So they are so good at this process, and I've learned so much about resistance, about triggers, so many things that I have practiced and taught for so many years and written about. I see it and I hear it in them. So this is really amazing for me. It's amazing for me to be part of this. And we plan, but then so much of magic happens that is not planned. That's why it's very hard. It's very hard for us to describe what these things are. It's very hard to say, look, this is what we're going. We can say this is what we're going to do. We're going to do some mantras. We're going to do pujas. But the depth, the scope, it's like when we come together, we are able to take people and open up this space, which is that faraway place that we come from. It happens right here on planet Earth. And Havelte becomes like a portal. It becomes like a time machine. Havelte is really transformed into some kind of intergalactic space in that time with these pujas and mantras. Something very magical is happening.
Well, I'm so curious also when we come together, and I really hope that a lot of people who have studied over the last years, that they will join. And I'm so curious what their contribution will be also. I don't know. 2 years ago, one of the years you couldn't come, I was with a group of people doing, I think, 4 pujas in 2 days or 5 pujas in 3 days. I don't remember. And that's that same magical experience happened in a way there also. Also, it was really, really fantastic to see that over time everything was changing in a way. The whole reality was changing. So the people whom I knew and who I knew by name and who I had practiced with and studied with, and when we came together there, over time they really changed in some kind of angelic entities, like the room did and the floor did and the field did and the air did. It was really of such a light and transparency and lucidity. And that was really a wonderful moment of, I would say, embodied light. So where the realms come together, where the earth changed into heaven in a way. It was really very remarkable. And I'm really curious if we come together, for this is already 2 years ago again. I'm really so curious what's going to happen. Yeah. And one never knows, but I'm thrilled about it.
Well, thank you both. I hear you speak about mantra and puja and also how difficult it is to put it into words, but I'm very curious if you can try to explain how you both personally benefit from mantra and puja. Russell?
So let's take some very simple definitions of mantra and puja, then be able to speak to what it means to me. Because these definitions come out of my practice. And I think these definitions are definitions that Remmelt will also relate to. He's already spoken of it. He's already said exactly this. So there are these two modalities. And of course, you know, chanting is very important. So the musical part, the chanting, the music, this is a very powerful tool. It's a transformative tool. You know, we go to concerts and we love the chanting experience, and music is itself very transformative. But what's special about what we do together is that there are these two very unique tools. One is mantra, the other is puja. And to understand mantra, first of all, the best way to understand it is that it is a type of language. It is a form of speech, sacred speech, we say. Sacred speech. Now, there's a beautiful definition for mantra that I think is so applicable, and that I know Remmelt and Carla and so many of the people who come to Centrum World Tantra, who are therapists, because therapy is such an important part of the process, will love this definition. First of all, I think it might have been Oprah who said a wound, any wound, is a place where the light can come inside. It's a very beautiful, you know, Oprah had gone through very severe trauma in her childhood, very severe abuse as a child, extreme. And she became such a world-class communicator and host. And she shared this thing about the wound being a place where the light can come in. But a wound is also a place where we are very protective. We don't want anything to come in, let alone light. It's like we protect our wounds. Now, here's the definition of a mantra. A mantra is light encoded in a sound. A mantra is light, and by light we mean presence, spiritual power, transformative beauty. A mantra is like spiritual light, a quality of presence, a very special quality of presence, but it's encoded in a sound, so it's encoded. Now, we may be protective, but a mantra is one of those special types of vehicles that we might allow inside the wound, because it's light encoded in a sound. And it makes it possible because there are these different ways. And basically, the yoga of sound is offering so many different types of ways of working with mantra, not just one way. People think of mantra as only one thing, kirtan, chanting, music. But we have been studying many different ways, three ways particularly. That is what the yoga of sound is about. And many students have learned these methods. But what's very powerful about how we are going to use mantra in Havalte this year, in June 2023, is we're going to use this understanding of how a mantra is light encoded in a sound that we can find a way to allow into our wounds, and we have to find a way to unpack that coding. And this is where the secret knowledge becomes very valuable, the type of knowledge that we come through what is called mantra shastra. There is a science. We don't say the mantras any way we want. We have some special ways of dealing with it. So this is what is particular to us. Mm. This is what we teach.
When I hear you, Rosa, I also think of sound, consciousness embedded in sound. And vibration, of course, for the sound is vibration. And even if I like what you're saying very much, and it reminds me of the experience of, even if you might think that you are just singing or chanting, the vibration enters into the places where it's needed anyhow. And often I have seen that people were surprised or shocked even by the depth of how they were touched after a moment where they thought that they would only sing a little bit together like that, you know? So the vibration took them by surprise in a way, or the healing takes them by surprise in a way. So even if you don't find a way deliberately to let the healing happen, it will happen anyhow, for you can hardly defend against sound. There's no way to close oneself to sound, I think. Yeah, well, it is, as Russell says, There are so many meanings and benedictions from the mantra. When Russell is speaking about the healing, we might easily think that it's about healing the person, healing the body, healing the psyche of the person. And I agree. I fully agree. In fact, I had to remember last evening of our first pilgrimage when we were in Chennai. on your hotel room with all the other participants. I don't know if you remember, but I realized that I had literally the experience that all the chakras were, while we were singing there, as if all the chakras got connected in one aligned lineage in a way. And it was really very, very impressive experience of healing the divisions in my body and to experience myself as a unity again within my body. But I strongly believe that everything that's happening inside is also happening outside. So when there is a division healed within the body, then something is healed also between me and the world, you could say, or between me and the universe. So mantra the healing aspects of mantra, they're not restricted to healing the body or the psyche, but they also help me. And in fact, that's what I like, I don't know, most, but I like it very much. There is the experience of reconnecting to the invisible world, you could say, the non-material world. Yeah.
These are some really beautiful things you said, Remmel, and sometimes the person listening to it may feel, so if I come to Havelte, will I also have all my chakras lined up like this? I think it's a good question, and I'd like to speak a little bit to that, because I think what you're saying, Remmel, is there was an overall experience with pujas and things like that, and then this happened. It's not like we went to India to get our chakras aligned, but the alignment of the chakras was the effect, the result of something bigger. And that's what I feel is very important, that sometimes people may not realize. It's really the puja component that creates that wholeness. And then the effect, one of the effects is this deep healing of the energy body and the chakra experience. More as a byproduct, as a bonus, as a gift, because we already did that in Havelte. You know, we studied the chakras, and maybe this is a time I could share one possibility, one small possibility that we can do in Havelte, because what I wanted to teach, especially the students who I believe many are yoga teachers, some are chanters, and some are healers, therapists, is I wanted to teach the anatomy of bija. And so there are the chakra bijas, you know, like rum, vum, ram. I want to teach how bijas are constructed. And then I want to teach seven bijas related to the sacred masculine and seven bijas related to the divine feminine. And these are coming from the deep tantric tradition, from the very deep tantric tradition, the underground secretive tantric tradition. Very interesting, and have an element of play. But we will also learn this in the context of puja. Instead of teaching it with charts and PowerPoint and all this typical way that people are used to in the books, you know, we teach it in the traditional tantric way through puja. From the morning itself, we bring the deity in, and slowly over the course of the day, we have this experience, and maybe we speak a little bit about puja now.
Yes, yes, good idea. Please explain more about puja and also the purpose of it. And also puja in relation to mantra, of course.
Again, I want to reference what Remelt was talking about earlier, because Remelt was saying how he feels when he did those four pujas in Havelte, how everything changed. It's like an altered state. It's like being on drugs, but without any side effects of the drugs. It's a genuine effect. I mean, it could be compared to any of the most powerful hallucinogens sometimes that people take. And it's very true. Because you're not taking something, you're not taking a drug. It's actually happening because of the puja. So what is puja? And one of the definitions of puja that I've used to help my students understand, and I've shared this with, you know, the students of Centrambur Tantra who did the Shodasha, they studied the Shodasha. A puja is a process in which the boundaries that separate the visible and the invisible worlds are dissolved. It's a process. We don't want to think of it as a ritual, because a ritual, I think many Dutch people react. They don't want ritual. It is not a ritual. It is a process. It is a process. It's a magical, alchemical process by which the boundaries between the visible and invisible world are dissolved, and we start to have this altered state that begins to prevail. It's not an altered state that just comes and goes. It's solid. It's there. And most importantly, we're all sharing it. When we do this thing together, we're all sharing it. But here's something very important about puja. Puja consists of a few elements. One of those elements is mantra. One of those elements is mudra, being able to use certain types of gestures also, because that the way we use our body is also affecting our experience. So we use our body in certain ways. We use our voices in certain ways and ways in which we are not used to. So the puja is using the voice and using the body in ways that we typically do not use the voice and do not use the body. And then there's this other thing, which is, you know, we talked about other regions, we can say other regions of consciousness. You know, my very close friend died in 2004. And it was a big hole in my life, you know, after he passed on very suddenly. Very unexpectedly. He was a very brilliant man. And he was also a very holy man. So my friend will talk about how, his name was Wayne Teasdale, by the way. If we humans are the only forms of intelligent life in this cosmos, if we are the only intelligences in this cosmos, what a waste of space. What a waste of space. It's a powerful, powerful point, because he's saying, look, we're not talking about gods with elephants' heads and so on. We're talking about intelligence. Intelligence. So this is another thing is very important to understand. Intelligences are floating around, meaning we have to find a way to connect. We have to find a way to listen so that we can connect to a world we do not see. And so we need different types of apparatus. I mean, we have microphones now, but the intelligences are now so sophisticated. People can be 20 miles away and use certain types of devices to listen to what we're saying right now. Tantra is like that. Puja is like that. It's about tuning in to different types of intelligences and places that we normally don't, unless we have this type of altered state, unless these boundaries are dissolved, unless we use a certain type of apparatus and dial it in. And we really dial it in. It's not like we are, it's just us in that space. something else also starts to come in. And we allow that. We are consciously allowing it. That's what puja is. We're consciously allowing it. We're not imagining it. We're not imagining it. And I share that very much, I would say, with the model that Centrum Word Tantra has. No, I don't like to use the imagination and say, okay, now there is a blue light in the middle of your forehead and all kind of shaktis. No, this is not our approach. We want it to be real. We want it to be so real that you cannot blink it away. You cannot turn away from it. You can ask the question, is this real? And it's still there. That's the kind of experience we want to tap and we want to share. Mm. That's real puja.
Impressive. Mm. Mm.
I'm speechless in a way. I know it's true way you talk about. I know it from you. I know it from myself. And yet, I wanted to say that when we speak about it, and when I listen with the ears of some of the people who might hear this podcast, then I can really imagine that it's impossible to understand where we are talking about. And yet it's true. That's it. Let me try to read, to quote you, to illustrate this difficulty. Okay, here it comes. And because yourself does not exist by itself, but as an expression of this universe, as an expression of divinity, as an expression of something very hard to define in human language, because it's deeper than normal human perception, your voice embodies more than you can ever understand or describe or even discern.
Yes, it brings us to the whole actually it connects very deeply with the non-dual experience, because if we use the word consciousness, you mentioned this word as very similar to the word presence and how we're talking about mantra, because mantra is very much about consciousness also. And we mean consciousness, of course, with a big C, because we mean everything. Not so much I, this individual, am conscious of this moment. That is one level of consciousness, but there's a big, big consciousness in which there's so much in this universe. And so when we start to talk about consciousness, we are using our voices, and the muscles we are using are made up of consciousness. Our awareness is an aspect of consciousness. The thinking mind and reason is an aspect of consciousness. Our physical body is an aspect of consciousness. So it becomes very difficult to explain consciousness, because the voice itself is an aspect of it, and the mind is an aspect of it. But this is why mantra is so powerful, because with the use of mantra, especially when we learn to use it in a certain way, it becomes a means of tapping into this experience that we call consciousness. Because unlike regular language communicates concepts very clearly and easily. Regular language is very practical. But mantric language is different. Mantric language is different because the sound of whatever it is we're talking about is also the name, is also the experience, is also the image, is also the idea, is also the concept, is also the emotion, is also the relationship, It's also the awakening. It's also the insight. It's all these things. It's like a gestalt. Everything is contained in it. And it's not objectifying. It is not abstracting. It is not extracting. But it is including. It is unifying. It is healing. It is nurturing. It is loving. It is shaping. It is evolving. It is catalytic, meaning it is transformative. So this is the difference between using mantra and ordinary language. This is why it's so powerful, because it's like a type of code. You know, we speak of computer code today, whereby there's something underneath what we see. Something underneath that we don't see. But mantra is so good at helping us see what we don't see. And this is a technical term for it. It's called mantra drashta. In Sanskrit, dhr means to see, to perceive. Mantra drashta means to be able to see. To be able to see what the sound is communicating, conveying, revealing. And in this sense, it is very much like the experience of drugs. Because remember, in the 60s, people were seeing sound. People were hearing colors, right? There is a technical term for that. It's called synesthesia, where the faculties cross over. Because the brain is so affected by the drug that we can actually see the sound or hear the color or feel the color. Well, that is the experience of what mantra does, because it's a type of language that facilitates synesthesia. It's magical. It's magical.
Yeah. And now you started to talk about the you mentioned the word non-dual, so that hints to, I think, I presume, that hints to how the language of mantra can have such a depth that when the borders are crossed in a way, or when the boundaries are dissolved, there is an experience of oneness with everything, you could say. And recognizing everything as one unity, or even one, instead of two, me and the other, or me and the divine, at that point, the differentiation is no longer part of the experience. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, I think you express it very, very well. I think what you're saying, Remolt, is that mantra is a way to know non-dual experience, because it is doing exactly that, just like puja is a way to know non-dual experience, because we cannot speak of non-dual experience. It is so difficult to speak about, but we can enter into it. The question is how? How to enter into non-dual experience, because language, by its very nature, is dualistic. So how can we use language that is dualistic and born of the dualistic experience? How can we use language to know the non-dual experience? So mantra, as you're saying, Remolt, is a type of language that in itself is embodying the non-dual state and facilitating the non-dual experience. Now, there is another beautiful word for the language of mantra. We call it sandhya bhasha. Sandhya means meeting, joining. Bhasha means language. So in the ancient Himalayas, yogis used a form of Sanskrit that they called the twilight language, or the meeting language. The language of union, because that's what you're saying, right, Ramal? You're talking about this union coming about where the differentiation is resolved. The differentiation is resolved. Yes, the dualistic state always has these differentiations. We feel separated, we feel the pain, we feel the hurt, we feel the anger, we objectify, we subjectify. But then in the non-dual experience, it comes to, it's like everything getting knit, K-N-I-T, knit together, like a good strong weave, like a good sweater. Everything is well knit together, because that's one of the definitions of tantra, which means to weave, to make a web, to make a loom. It's a beautiful term, but so mantra can help in the non-dual experience by facilitating the non-dual state without words, to convey that state, to reveal that state, to express that state, to enhance that state. Because sometimes in the non-dual state, how do we enhance it? How does it get stronger? How to make it more powerful? How to make it deeper? When we enter the non-dual state, we cannot use words there to make it deeper once we enter that state. But mantra becomes a very powerful language to take the entry into non-dual state and go even deeper.
I think it's partly a question of surrendering into something which you cannot know. So there's nothing you can do, but the quality of surrender can operate and help us to enter into a realm where our vision isn't so familiar and clear any longer. That's what I liked about the word twilight, when you said twilight, you know, like then it's difficult to stick to the definitions and to stick to the differences between one and another, or this realm or the other, you know, like when it starts to meld in the light which is fading, and then I think it's necessary to be guided by surrender somehow
Yes, you bring up a very important point about surrender, because in the whole non-dual state, you are absolutely right. In order to enter into the non-dual state, we have to find this deep surrender, because we cannot achieve it. We have to almost fall into it, glide into it, sink into it. But once we are able to sink into it, then we have to keep surrendering deeper and deeper and deeper. And that's where it gets difficult, how to surrender deeper. And what I have come to discover is that Tantra has a vocabulary of mantra and mudra that's very helpful. For instance, sometimes when we are in a very deep state and we don't want to use words, and then we are finding it hard to surrender because some memory comes up. Maybe some traumatic memory comes up, and it becomes hard then, because then there's a very deep state already there, non-dual state, but then a dualistic state is pushing. It wants to happen also. So in that moment, doing something, using a mudra, for instance, using a mudra, an effective mudra, where we can still keep the silence and at the same time be able to address what's happening. Or sometimes we feel it is necessary to speak, but we don't want to use regular words. So even in the deep non-dual state, when we are challenged in the non-dual state, because the non-dual state requires these deeper, deeper, deeper surrenders. But how to surrender? How to surrender to the next level of depth, how to get even deeper into the non-dual state. So Tantra offers this vocabulary of mudras, you know, even while sitting quietly, we can do things that connect us in very simple ways and very eloquent ways. So we're not using the voice, we're only using the body, and we're not moving the body to get up and go do something. We're just sitting there, but we're not sitting still. So this is very powerful also for healing. Even sometimes when people are having a hard time with integrating difficult experiences, maybe they listen to the news and they become so disturbed. You understand, sometimes it's possible to hear a piece of news and become very disturbed. It brings up some old trauma that's hard to integrate. Mudras can be so powerful. Mantras can be very powerful. And this is part of the thing I also want to share, because I think for therapists to be able to know this vocabulary is so powerful, so powerful. The problem with trauma, when it's activated, is there is no clear and present danger. But the nervous system feels like, yes, there is a danger right now. So how do we deal with trauma in the non-dual state? Because in the non-dual state, we have entered a deep state, but the body wants to get up and leave the room. So that's how do we surrender when the body wants to get up and leave the room, but we're already there's a deep state. So this vocabulary of Tantra is so incredible. And I say this from experience. I say this from doing exactly this, of sitting in meditation, first of all, not being able to tap a deep state. And then
I wonder if you talk about, you could say the mudras by itself, which is a science, but of course the mudras are also, I presume, an expression of presence.
Absolutely.
Gesture, presence in gestures.
Very much so.
So it's another way of applying presence in a situation where you're challenged to leave your deep state of presence and consciousness.
Exactly. And that's why when we do puja, we're able to sustain the state and get deeper and make it more enriched and expanded over a long period of time, because we're looking at hours and hours every day, and day after day after day, we're able to sustain it and make it deeper and more powerful and stronger and create new openings. So when we're together, it's pretty amazing using these tools of mantra and mudra, because puja includes both. Puja includes mudra and mantra.
Kimi.
Remold. Well, I get all these flashbacks from when you, Russell, joined us in the mystery school, and I experienced it as a student only briefly, but it was so powerful and I was absolutely captivated. So it's a delight to listen to you both. And I was wondering, how experienced do you have to be to benefit from this travel of discovery?
Personally, the way I would like to conduct the workshop, and I'm sure Remold and Carla would feel very comfortable with this, is that we conduct the entire workshop around the experience of puja, where we, in a simple way, explain that process as though we are explaining it to people who have never experienced it before. And so over the course of the day, there is an understanding of what we are doing, so that in the evening, when we actually do the puja together as a community, everybody, including those who have no idea, who have never come to anything before, will have a very good sense of what this is and why we are doing it. Now, the other part is going to be around the mantra, the sacred sound component. So the sacred sound component is going to have a very clear curriculum. It's going to be these seven mantras related to the sacred masculine and seven mantras dedicated to the divine feminine. And we're going to teach people how to use this classic tantric mantra and also have an understanding of the anatomy, how they are constructed, so that people can play with them. People will have time to play with them, to experiment with them. And then we will also use them in the puja along with music and chanting and dancing and smells and powders. So over the course of the day, we're building this experience. It may seem like, well, how do people who have no idea blend with people who have some idea or people who are very much knowledgeable about these things. And I think this is where our expertise come in, because between Remmelt and Carla and I, we have close to, I think, or maybe more than 100 years of teaching experience between us. So this is quite a lot that we are used to. I'm used to working with multiple levels of people at the same time over long periods of time. But here's one more thing, which is normal and I think to be expected, which is people's resistances. You know, people may come and say, well, I don't understand. I'm having a reaction to this mantra, kind of like medication. Oh, this mantra is making me feel bad, or it's making me feel angry. And I think this is where we have to see Remmelt and Carla's expertise. They are so good at helping people through those processes. So if somebody is new, hasn't experienced this, if they're worried, I may have a reaction to some things, I would say you're in good hands, because Carla and Remmelt are the best people to be with if you're having a reaction.
Mm. Well, thank you. When you talk about the day of exploration and discovery and approaching and then finally culminating into the puja in the evening, it also feels like, especially when you talk about dancing and singing and movement and things like that, it gives a sense of, you could say, a kind of spiritual partying in the evening, you know, like having, and no, really, I think it's about celebration. So we will have celebrating evenings of a very special kind, I would say. Yeah.
Very much so. And during the course of the day, there is education and experience. Mm. So during the course of the day, they're learning, people are learning, and people are experiencing. This is not just about learning conceptually, even though that will be there, but it's also about experiencing. And it's not just about experiencing without understanding. It's going to be both education and experience. So this is very important for people to understand. It's not going to be all education where you just come and you get ideas and you learn and you take notes and you understand the anatomy. No, it's very much about experience. But we also don't want people to think, oh, it's all about experience. We close our eyes, just meditate, chant. That's not going to be it either. People need to understand. So there's understanding and experience. But the cool part is we are educating and experiencing in view of celebrating in the evening. So every evening, absolutely, it's a party.
Party time.
Every evening is a party. One day we party with fire, one day we party with flowers.
Mm. I think it's important that people know that there are no special qualities required. It doesn't matter if you can sing, it doesn't matter if you're musical, it doesn't matter if you're, if you know Sanskrit I think the main thing is if you are driven by curiosity in a way. And to me, especially after all these years that you haven't been able to come, I really feel that for anyone, there is really a chance, a huge chance. You could say chance in the sense of opportunity, but also risk. You never know what's going to happen. And you might enter into realms which you haven't known before, or experiences that you could hardly imagine that they were possible. I hope people feel invited to share that journey. Yeah.
Well, thank you both so much. And as a final question, I was wondering if you could share your ideas on how people can integrate the practice and the teachings from the retreat into their daily lives.
Mm-hmm. I want to say that maybe the sequence of bija mantras Russell mentioned together with the mudras, and I did them many times with the students here in Holland, but I want to confess that they are really at this moment they are my main practice, and they are simple, and I use them many times a day just to reconnect to my presence again, to feel my body in all these several elements. It's a simple practice, and we will repeat it most likely in the retreat in Havelte. I want to say even the simple practices can be of tremendous value during your life. You don't have to be able to master a complete puja by yourself in order to benefit from it in your daily life. And further on, it's like that people feel interest, and they feel thrilled, and they want to go on, and then there are many things like we will study together starting in autumn again, studying together, learning together, trying to discover more about it, which is in a way a serious adventure. Then you have a serious endeavor. But if you just want to come and sing every month, you can come and sing. Join. We have evenings that differ from atmosphere every time. Sometimes they are really serene and sweet and soft, and sometimes they are very alive and very vivid, and sometimes they are shockingly strong, all with the same mantra material in a way. And it's fascinating to discover all these different qualities. You don't have to know 10 mantras before you feel the beneficial of it. So if you want, you can continue, and if you find discipline and or enthusiasm, it will help you to proceed.
Okay, to finish this episode, how are you both feeling after your talk?
Well, I feel a lot of compassion and a little concern for you. For you, Kimi, because I think, whoa, to make an edit from it, I think it might be a hell of a job for you to do. I'm very happy that you were listening and said something about how you were involved while you were listening. So that is kind of reassurance for me that it isn't been completely impossible to follow. Let's put it like that. Yeah. And I feel thrilled again. I really think, okay, so when are we going to start? And can it be tomorrow? Something like that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you, Remmelt.
You're welcome.
Russell.
Not only I felt during this conversation that we could speak very clearly to all the different points we had in mind, the different groups and so on, but I believe that we were able to be in a space together that is a very warm space, a really warm space. And it's like there's a word for it. It's like an indicator. It's an indicator of the warmth to look forward to, of time together, but also the magic and the discovery and the thrill. And, you know, I like Remmel's word of risk also, because, you know, there are things we don't know, and that's part of the excitement and the process. But I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled. I'm eager. I'm very joyful. I feel very full. I feel peaceful. I'm also very, very excited.
Well, thank you both so much. Thank you for listening to the Centrum for Tantra podcast. If you're interested in joining the Yoga of Sound retreat, please check our website, centrumfortantra.nl.